From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in Rochester over the last several years, where a woman named Becky was trying to help her son battle heroin addiction. And she spent hours waiting on the telephone at times, trying to sort out insurance to cover this battle with addiction. Becky says it was heartbreaking, finding out sometimes what you think is covered is not. It can be expensive, time-consuming. And a few months ago, earlier this year, her son died. You will hear her story this hour. Becky believes her son could have been saved if a number of things had happened differently, and one of them is the battle with insurance. She is hardly alone. Parents trying to navigate the insurance process are running into questions, frustration, and denials. And today, New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman put out a release saying that anyone denied insurance coverage for addiction treatment and mental illness should contact his office directly for help. He recognizes this is a problem. This hour, we welcome parents who are hoping that the system will change to make it easier for families to grapple with addiction. You don't need me to tell you that heroin has become an epidemic. People are dying every week in this state. Addiction to painkillers is a twin challenge so closely related. And let me go ahead and welcome my guests who are going to work us through what's going on now and also what's coming up next week in a kind of a town hall meeting that they've organized. In studio with us are parents and people who can tell us about their story. Becky is here. Becky, welcome.
Hi, Evan.
Nice to have you.
Thank you for being here.
Kathy Miller is here. Welcome to Kathy.
Thank you. You too.
And Donna Rose is here. Donna, welcome to you.
Hi.
And Avi Israel is on the phone with us, and Avi's son Michael lost his son Michael in Avi 2011. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, thank you for having me. Yeah, thank you for taking the time. And what I'd like to do first is just invite you all to sort of let our listeners know your own story, and then we're going to talk about what's been going on and maybe some of your reaction to hearing from the Attorney General today and then what's coming on. I see Donna's mouthing, wow. You're saying, wow. That surprised you to see that, huh?
Yes, but I'm very pleased.
All right. Well, Donna, I'll start with you. Tell me your story.
My name is Donna Rose, and I am the mom of a 20-year-old heroin addict. For the last 2.5 years, it has been a nightmare, literally trying to save our son's life, in that addiction renders him incapable of saving his own life. We have been through 3 overdoses, many arrests. We had him jailed to save his life. We've met with counselors, therapists, inpatient, outpatient. We have had mental health referrals done that we've paid for out of pocket. It has been all-consuming for his dad and me. And I am at the point now where I need to speak out, especially in regard to insurance denials regarding treatment for addiction and or underlying mental health issues. On April 12th, I was able to attend a meeting where the bureau chief from the healthcare division of the Attorney General's office presented a report called Real Solutions for Real New Yorkers. This was regarding 2015. I stood and I spoke for the parents, for the families, for the friends I've made through Naranon groups. A year and a half, I, in desperation, went to One at Unity to find answers on how to save our son, what to do. Give me the blueprint, we'll do it. What we found there was that we could only fix ourselves. And I met, through that group, a dear friend, Becky. Kathy is my other dear friend. We've been down this road for a year and a half, like blind mice stumbling through the dark, trying desperately to learn and to help our children. Well, back to the meeting in Buffalo. When I heard the presentation which said insurance companies are doing better with providing treatment, as is promised in the plans we buy, I was confused. I had learned that there are 3 laws in New York State regarding insurance coverage that are being violated continuously by insurance companies across the state. I heard this from all of the families in Naranon, in Erie County, Genesee County, and Monroe County. And we all were facing the same story. These are the three laws that I hope all of your listeners take to heart. The first law, and these are under the parity laws, state and federal, of 2006 and 2008. The first law is that addiction must be treated by insurance companies as any other disease, because addiction is a disease. It is a brain disease. When use turns into abuse and then ends up with addiction, it is not a choice. It is a primal drive within the brain to survive. And it is untreated, terminal. So addiction must be treated as any other disease. The second law is, and this is happening everywhere, insurance companies are denying inpatient until a suffering person fails at outpatient one, two, or three times. That's against the law, but it's being done everywhere. The third law is that insurance companies cannot use what they deem motivation to determine access to treatment. Motivation means behaviors, attitude. Our denial letter said this. You have a safe, supportive environment in which to live, good friends, and have had no disruption in your relationships over 30 days. Denied treatment, denied inpatient, denied. We had many denials.
I don't understand that.
We didn't understand it either until we read our plan, which was supposed to be what they call the Cadillac plan. It says unlimited inpatient for chemical dependency and or mental health issues and, by the way, eating disorders. It's all within those parity laws. Even though you heard our history and the denials were there, at the bottom of the booklet that tells you about the plan's benefits, there's a caveat, a tiny little print says, all benefits are subject to medical necessity. I called our insurance company many times and said, would you send me a list of what constitutes medical necessity so that we can somehow gather together everything the insurance company requires? I was promised at least three times, oh yes, we'll send that to you. Oh yes, never received it. I didn't know at that time. That's motivation. Your mom and dad love you. You have a place to live. I was hearing from people that you could get your loved one into treatment if you were willing to make that person homeless and stop your insurance right away and slide them into Medicaid.
That's why you decided to make your son homeless, to give him a chance?
I didn't. We did not. We did there. Our son is 20. His drug use began when he was probably 12 or 13. Started out with pot, moved into a little alcohol, then, of course, the oxys, which we now know was OxyContin, which is a chemically modified form of morphine. All pain medications are narcotic. All pain medications are modified, chemically altered forms of morphine. When they hit the brain, it's no different than the young person on the street seeking heroin bags, only the medications are far more expensive. Heroin's cheap.
And I'm sorry, what I heard you say earlier was that you had your son jailed, right?
Last February, yes, because we knew the next heroin, whether it be snorted or shot, injected, might be the last one, because most of the heroin coming from Buffalo and Rochester is laced with fentanyl. Fentanyl is the highest potency form, the modified form. It's what they use in surgery. And you instantly are out and you wake up in an hour. The dealers know that if they lace heroin with fentanyl, that it has a higher high, a faster high, but it's a deadly high.
Yeah, we've talked about that in this program. And listeners, it was a couple of years ago when the director of the drug section of the Monroe County Crime Lab made the point that there are people purchasing drugs, not even knowing what they're getting.
Exactly.
You may buy heroin, not knowing it's cut with fentanyl.
Let me go back to the fact that when you have a 19, 20, 21-year-old, and they started using drugs early on, these are developing adolescent brains. They are altered, and their emotional, mental development, reasoning, you know, the frontal cortex that controls decision-making and emotion, and there's another one, can't remember, that is affected by this drug use. We're dealing with young people who are thinking, reasoning, emoting, reacting as if they were 13. I don't know if you've dealt with a 13-year-old, but it's tough. So they're not capable. No suffering addict is capable of making the decision to save their own lives without treatment.
And you were told, essentially, you could get covered, but because you've created such a loving environment?
No, that's not it at all. Yes. What they're doing
the motivation thing. The whole...
Well, would you say to someone who needs dialysis, your mom and dad love you, you're not homeless, you haven't, I don't even know what that, no disruption in your relationships means, so we're denying you dialysis.
So if things were worse for you, we would maybe get you some help, but things are pretty good for you. You've got a loving family, a loving environment.
Our insurance company has paid for, at least three ambulance rides, one suicidal evaluation at a hospital where they said, well, he's stable, medically stable, he's lucid, intelligent, take him home. Our insurance company paid for emergency room visits where we were trying to get our son into detox, but we were told he's a low-level heroin user. He's only using 5 bags a day. We got 20 people coming in here using 20. We take them. Here's 4 medicines. Take them home. Detox them yourself. I bet you can imagine how well that went. So this little caveat, all benefits are subject to medical necessity, is the way insurance companies deny you what they promise you when you buy their plans. And never once has our insurance company sent back to us one premium. And may I just be a little lighthearted here? My husband and I, between us, have taught for 73 years. And all of those years, our school district paid the major portion of what was required for a family plan. We figure out between the two of us, that's probably, and the school district, probably about $500,000 over those 73 years. And our son was denied detox, but we could drive and pay $1,200. Our son was denied inpatient when he came out of jail because he didn't have drugs in his system, and every medical person, every treatment facility, and every insurance company knows that the highest risk of overdose death occurs when the drugs are out of the system. And the brain hasn't changed in its thinking and need and behavior. So you go back out and use the same amount of heroin that you used before you went in, your tolerance is extremely low. There's the risk of overdose death.
Do you think insurance companies are purposely ignoring or breaking laws?
Yes, and I can prove it. I have right before me page 10 of the Attorney General's report. Our insurance company was looked into by the Attorney General's office. And between 2011 and 2014, our insurance company denied 2,700 people seeking treatment, and insurance denied them. They were using motivation to deny. They were treating addiction differently than they treat other diseases. And they were requiring failed outpatient 1, 2, 3 times. They were also requiring pre-authorizations, which they denied. And let me tell you, I spent weeks, hours, days trying to figure out how to navigate this. How do you get through to the insurance company? call, we'll get back to you. We'll send you some forms. Fill them out. We'll get back to you. I, sir, am a retired first grade teacher, but I have a pretty good reading level. And I was baffled, overwhelmed with the amount of paperwork and couldn't figure out what to do next. And I assure you, there was no way our son could in any way navigate the insurance system. He is very fortunate. He has a mom and dad who are retired, and we are pit bulls. But what about those two? Now, let me tell you the rest of this. The Attorney General's office told this insurance company, change your way of determining medical necessity. Stop breaking the laws. Well, you know how many cases have been settled since March 2015? 10. That means right now, today, there are 2,690 people suffering with this fatal disease if left untreated. Where are they? And I know that some of them are not alive right now. Some of the moms that come to the grief groups are telling us their kids were denied treatment while they were scurrying to remortgage their houses, to cash in their pensions, to borrow money, to try and get them into treatment. Their kids died. To get our kid from a detox, we did get him into a detox, and insurance paid for that. He could walk across the street to inpatient, but insurance would not pay for that. They denied us. They denied us twice. I got a mental health evaluations, which, believe me, you pay out of pocket, and they're worthless, because anybody on drugs mimics any kind of mental issue you can imagine. Those were worthless, but I got them. And then I drove there to the hospital, the inpatient 30-day program, with a check for $13,000 so that our son could walk across the street and go into treatment. Then we also received another bill for $2,237 that we still owe. And the reason I was able to do that was because my brother, who was a drug addict and lived a long time, but not the kind of life you'd want, believe me, died and left me exactly $13,000. And I know that the Attorney General's office is monitoring. We were told at that meeting in Buffalo, April 12th, they have focus groups, they're collecting data, and they're doing their jobs. However, my husband at that point was home watching our son to make sure he didn't overdose and die. The last overdose he had, we were able to save his life with a Narcan kit just because we happened to be home, just because God took me upstairs with two towels to put away, and I walked in and found him. And that changed me, Evan. It changed me. And I will never be the same, and I will never stop standing up, demanding justice, demanding truth. The insurance company's bottom line is money, the love of money. And the Attorney General's office should not be just monitoring what's going on, but as the chief and law enforcement agency of our state, they should be enforcing the law.
Okay, well, that's Donna's story, and there are so many like her. So what I want to do is, and you can see the passion and it's just the genuine concern. And I want to bring in some of the other parents as we talk about these challenges. Avi Israel's on the line with us, who lost his son Michael in 2011. Avi, I think some of our listeners may have read and understood your story throughout the years. There's so much you have done in the intervening 5 years, but why don't you remind our listeners your story?
Well, my story is a little different than Donna's. Michael was prescribed into addiction by his doctors. Michael suffered from Crohn's disease, and three different doctors prescribed him painkillers and the Xanax and the Cymbaltas and the mood altering drugs. When Michael admitted that he was addicted, we tried to find a place for him to go to, and we're checking with our doctors and checking with the doctors who prescribed him into addiction. No one knew where to go to, and we're calling our insurance company. No one could give us a place to go to. So we finally found a place that would take him, and that was 291 Elm in Buffalo. And 2 days later, I get a letter from Blue Cross and Blue Shield denying treatment and saying that the reason for the denial was that there was not a doctor in the facility for 24 hours at a time. Which no one really has a doctor in the facility for 24 hours at a time. At the time, we didn't know what was going on, so we kind of like just went away. And then Michael came home. 2 weeks later, he tried to commit suicide. And that was May 17. We went to Erie County Medical Center, spent 12 hours over there. Michael was sent home. And then on June 4th, again, Michael asked for help from his counselor and was told that there's no beds, went into the back bedroom and shot himself. And, you know, we've decided to make people aware of what's going on since then. But I think there's a point that we need to touch on over here that's maybe it's missing from Donna's story. And then the fact is that, you know, when you get hurt today, whatever pain that ails you, you are prescribed opiates. And we all know that they're prescribed so liberally and all over the place. And frankly, they are being pushed down your throat by some physicians, and including dentists and general practitioners who really don't know anything about addiction. And insurance companies, in a way, subsidizes addiction by paying for those pills. Insurance company can limit the amount of the pills that are being pushed out, but they're not doing so. So they subsidize addiction, just like they did with my son. And when the time comes to pay for treatment, which can range anywhere from, you know, $15,000, $20,000 to $40,000, $50,000 for a treatment, they balk at it and deny you treatment for various reasons. And what happens to many people, basically, they just go away and disappear. And that's what insurance companies are looking for. Insurance companies are looking for several things to happen when they deny your treatment. Number one is that you just disappear, don't say a word, and pay for it out of your own pocket. Number two, you know, maybe if they're lucky enough, the patient dies in overdoses, so they don't have to treat them again. Number three is you move on to public assistance, which is Medicaid. And the word out right now is Medicaid pays for everything. So we're paying for it both ways. You know, as taxpayers, we're also paying for it by private insurance. There are several laws in New York State which allows you to challenge insurance companies, and they are favorable to the consumer. One immediate one is called Access for Treatment. We have fought for that. It went into effect 2 years ago, and in that, you have a right for external challenge to an external appeal to the insurance company's decision. And the Department of Financial Services, New York State Department of Financial Services, is the one that handles those appeals, and they have 72 hours to come up with a decision. In the meantime, insurance company are mandated to pay for treatment. And that's something that needs to be pushed out to the people. People have rights against insurance companies. A lot of times we just don't know about them.
We're talking to Avi Israel and in studio, Donna Rose, Kathy Miller, and Becky, they're all here talking about their families' struggles dealing with addiction in various ways and dealing with insurance companies in various ways. And Pamela on Twitter writes to the program and says, incredible show. How do we stop this behavior by insurance companies? Well, I want to point out that a couple of things here. There's a number of things that you should know, especially if someone in your family is dealing with addiction. Number one, as I mentioned at the start of the program, New York's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman put out a statement to the Associated Press overnight. And he wants everyone to know that the state's 2006 mental health parity law requires insurers to provide coverage for the diagnosis and the treatment at least equal to their coverage for other health conditions. And that's what Donna Rose was saying. Can't treat addiction differently. And the Attorney General is saying he agrees with that based on the law. And the Attorney General is saying that any New Yorkers facing barriers to coverage are asked to call his office directly. And I'll give you the number. It's 1-800-428-9071. I'll say it again. 1-800-428-9071. That's Attorney General Eric Schneiderman's statement overnight. Second of all, the parents that you're hearing on this program have organized a town hall meeting for a week from yesterday, next Tuesday night, the 17th of May. And that is at Genesee Community College at 6:30 p.m. So 6:30 p.m. next Tuesday night at Genesee Community College. If you go to the Genesee Community College campus, you'll see signs directing you to the town hall meeting. And Kathy Miller, for example, what's the goal? What will people be able to learn that night?
The goal is really, it's a voice. We expect people, parents, family members, even addicts, recovering addicts, to come forward and to have a voice in the denials, the reasons they were denied. And hopefully someone from the New York State Financial Services will come. Mm-hmm. Hopefully some of the political people will come, and they will hear, and they will listen.
I heard a rep from the AG's office should be there as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Donna knows more about that.
Okay.
She could just. And what we hope is that people will speak out on the reasons they're being medically denied. As she said, the parity laws. As Donna was speaking, you know, I realized something else. Addiction is a disease. And what happens is we say that because once somebody is, let's take, in my case, my daughter is a heroin addict in recovery. And what happens is there are medications to treatment. But how the insurance denies it is like this. Well, you're no longer using drugs or alcohol, so you no longer need treatment. But for just as you need diabetic insulin for mm-hmm. diabetes, you may need, an addict may need, there are different treatments, different things work. They may need some of the medications such as Suboxone, such as Vivitrol, such as Subutex, Bonneville. Those are treatment plans. And just as like someone with blood pressure, you know, sometimes you can go four years, blood pressure levels off, you're on one medication, you have to try a new medication. It's the same way with addiction. But the way we as a whole, as a society, and the insurance company looks at it is, well, I got, you know, you're no longer using drugs, so that critical moment, no longer you're done, we've treated it, and we don't have to treat it further. That's not the case. Addiction, there's no cure, and it has to continue to be treated, maybe through outpatient, maybe through inpatient, and it's the way we do it. So what we're trying to do with the town hall meeting is to begin a form of change. How we treat addiction is society as a whole and as the insurance company as a whole.
Do you think the insurance companies are learning as they go? And do you think there's a good faith effort for them to understand it better?
I think with anything, when it comes down to the dollar amount, it comes down to money. If there's a cost involved and they have to pay for it, it's not, they're going to find ways.
Well, and let me say, Abby, go ahead.
You know what I think? Insurance companies, every insurance company, it's a business. Let's face it, they're in business to sell you a product. What we're allowing to happen is for them to not to fulfill their end of the bargain, because you know that if you stop paying your premium, you're going to be dropped. But yet we're we are allowing them not to pay for treatment, and there's no way that we can drop them because it's necessary. But what I think insurance can play also a role, not only in, obviously in treating addiction, which is they are required to by law, but they have a role also to play in preventing addiction. And that to me would be through something like we did here in Western New York a couple years back, which was a campaign called "Painkillers Kill More Than Pain." And, you know, Blue Cross and Blue Shield partnered with Save the Michaels, and we had a three-month campaign going. I think insurance companies have a reason to stop the flow of prescription drugs so freely. I think they have a reason to educate the public. Because let's face it, addiction doesn't affect just one person. And every one of the three ladies sitting next to you will tell you it affects the whole family. And in some cases, it destroys a whole family. So there is a responsibility by insurance companies to limit the stuff. And obviously, when somebody needs help, they're mandated by law to treat addiction the same as any other disease. We're just not holding their feet to the fire. And this forum next week is to basically educate the public to let you know that you have rights.
All right,
you are a citizen. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say, Avi. What I want to do is, because I'm way late for a break, I want to take the only break of the hour and come back. I know there's listener interest. I want Becky to tell her story as well, and we're going to try to answer as many questions as we can this hour, and then you'll have this chance at this town hall meeting. Again, it's next Tuesday, the 17th of May, at Genesee Community College at 6:30. More connections straight ahead. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, the Open Door Mission and the Town of Gates are teaming up to open a new transitional housing facility for homeless women and children. It comes after that idea was rejected by a location in Rochester. We'll talk about the problem of NIMBY, and we'll learn about this new facility with the Open Door Mission. Second hour, the dangers of overtraining young athletes. Are we putting teenagers' bodies at risk long-term? Talk with you Thursday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our subject this hour is addiction and treatment and coverage through insurance. And the laws essentially say that insurance companies are not supposed to treat addiction differently. We've talked for years now in this program about mental health, about addiction, about the way we've kind of bifurcated our health approach to these for years. You've got physical injuries, then you've got mental challenges, and they're different. And sometimes the mental is lesser. And, you know, the point of this hour is to say there are so many people and so many families that have gone through this, and that Attorney General Eric Schneiderman is saying himself in a statement today, it is not supposed to be treated differently by insurance. You're supposed to have help. And Becky lost her son. You lost your son when, Becky?
That was February 22nd this year.
I am so sorry. I know it was a years-long battle. And you know, I don't want to sit here and assume that you think if insurance were different that everything would have turned out differently. Maybe it would have, but what was your fight with insurance? Give me a little sense for that.
It's constantly a battle with insurance, and they will deny anything they can. Like Donna said, getting into inpatient, they'll deny you until you go to outpatient. Constant battles. He was 27 years old, but he couldn't navigate the system. When you have addiction in your life, you just cannot. And who's to say? He could be alive today, maybe, had something gone better with the insurance companies. And I just say, hurrah, it's about time that things are changing. And we are just here to take a stand. And hopefully, you don't know how many kids, how many loved ones have been lost because they didn't get the treatment they needed.
Becky, for you, no one is an expert on just about anything in the medical field until you are that person who needs help. You're not an expert on heart conditions until you get diagnosed with something, and then you pour yourself into understanding it. Same thing with cancer, same thing probably with addiction.
Correct.
What was the biggest surprise? What was, and maybe the biggest frustration for you as a parent trying to help a child with addiction?
one of my frustrations is when they are ready to go, you need treatment now. When they say, I want help now. The last time my son went into detox, we had to call every day for 3 weeks to get a bed. And then he got out of detox, and he was doing great. Well, then we had to wait for inpatient. And then it's a wait, and it's a long wait. You know, people, when they are calling out for help, they need the help immediately. You can't wait. Sometimes you just cannot wait, you know.
Donna, you want to weigh in on that too? Go ahead.
Absolutely, I agree. When you think of the drive to use the drug again, to survive, that's on a cycle that is far short of 3 weeks. That's a daily, hourly drive. The potential for overdose and death is tremendous. Could I start at a different level about all of this?
Sure.
Last year, in this country, 47,000 people died of opiate death. 47,000. That's about 125 people a day. And I listen to the news now that I'm retired. I follow the news. I am wondering, when we first started to hear about the Zika virus, that's a real concern. Now, I know that the CDC requested $2 billion to address the Zika virus. And I also heard that our federal administration was looking to release $1.3 billion to aid in medically assisted treatment of addiction, which to me sounds like that goes right to the pharmaceutical companies, bypasses the need for detoxes, inpatients, mobile crisis units to help families as well as the addicts, all the residential, the halfway houses. I didn't hear a dime going toward that. So I'm wondering, where's the CDC on that? I'm also wondering, where is the Food and Drug Administration on all of these mind-altering drugs that are given to people coming out of inpatient? They say to them, take this, trazodone for sleeping, trileptal for what, depression, anxiety, take this one, oxycarbonate, all these, Abilify, which we now see is added as 1-800-BAD-DRUG because it releases compulsive obsessive urges in the brain. You're going to give that to somebody who already has very poor impulse control? When my son was at the 30-day program that we paid $13,000 to get him into, he left with 4 prescriptions. It was horrifying. I read all of the contraindications. Almost all of them say if you have suicidal thought or ideations, call who? No one manages, follows up after these drugs are given to people coming out of treatment. And you know what they say? Try these, see how you feel. Quadruple it, see how you feel. That's what they were doing when they started drug use, trying this to see how you feel. There's no monitoring when they come out, even when they come out of inpatient. Here's your 4 prescriptions. You're on your own. There should be managed care. There should be follow-up counseling, a medical person with knowledge of these drugs.
I know some listeners are waiting on the phone to weigh in. I just want to ask Avi Israel briefly on this point, because Avi, to some degree, there may be an assumption that what Donna is talking about may be a whole separate discussion, that are we prescribing the right drugs to begin with? Are we overdoing it with opioids and painkillers? Is that a problem? But when it comes to insurance, because that is essentially the focus of this hour.
Yes.
You view that tied together here?
Absolutely. I think that, I mean, the reason we have a problem, the reason we have an epidemic in this country that's raging right now, and it's killing, like Donna said, over 47,000 overdoses per year. And let's not forget that the number is much higher than that, because if you take somebody, in Michael's case, that was suicide, that is not even counted in there. So the number is much higher. We have prescribed ourselves into addiction. When I say that, we basically have given opiates to everything from a toothache to a twisted ankle to cancer pain, and decided that that was the way to go and do it. And now that we're facing a catastrophe, the only people that we can turn to are insurance companies who are subsidized addiction in many cases, were being denied treatment. You know, it's all tied together. The medical community has started this. Even if Donna's son was not prescribed by a doctor, somebody, a doctor somewhere, prescribed pain pills to somebody and way over prescribed that Donna's son was able to get hold of them. So it's all tied together. Insurance companies are ignoring their responsibility when it comes to the community safety and community health. You know, the point is, when you give a kid too many candies, they're going to get rotted teeth.
Donna, I know Donna wanted to say one more thing on this subject. Go ahead, Donna.
When Avi said that his son had been given drugs, Xanax, antidepressants, and most of our young people using drugs are very depressed before the drug and after. But you know what? Our son was prescribed something when he was 8. It was Adderall because he was diagnosed as ADD. Therefore, try the Adderall. Well, any drug will change brain chemistry. And may I tell you, I started teaching in 1971, first grade, little guys. There were always active little kids. They need to move and run and jump and play and march. Over time, the curriculum said, sit still, keep working at your desk, don't go outside, don't run, don't jump, don't play. Well, you know what's going to happen with 6- and 7-year-olds. They squirm and they're not focused. They need to move. So what do? Now, behavioral again. Because he's bouncing, jumping, moving, spinning around, the boys are like puppies, the girls are like kittens. They need to move. They were given Adderall, Concerta, what was the other one? Ritalin. Those are methamphetamines. If I were to give a 6-year-old child 3 cups of strong coffee, I would be arrested for abuse. You change the brain chemistry of all these little kids. And now, wait till the first time they do what we all did when we were 13 and 14. You stole a cigarette from mom and dad. You took a beer out of the neighbor's garage and drank it with your friends behind the house. Or in your case, you younger people, you smoked a little pot. Your brain is already set up for addiction. And bam, you try those drugs. What are you going to feel? I feel good. This feels good. Every addict I've talked to, and believe me, I would say at least 30 different young people, when I've talked to them and said, tell me about when you were young, every one of them has said, I was diagnosed ADD, ADHD. You know, when I went to college, manic depression was the term, not bipolar. Manic depression was a long period of months of severe depression, disabling depression, then followed by month-long periods of mania where you were doing things you just couldn't stop doing. Now, I believe, the pharmaceutical companies create the disorder when they already have the drugs ready to go. And bipolar is... People think up and down mood shifts. Well, if you're using drugs, you're probably going to be up and down, right? So they create the disorder and they have the medications ready to go. They're doing it all the time on TV. Watch the ads. Pseudo-affective bulbar disorder or something like that. When you're crying 1 minute and you laugh the next, they have drugs to treat it. People who have trouble sleeping at night, they have drugs to treat it. And everybody out there should buy the book Buzzed, B-U-Z-Z-E-D. Read about all the drug categories and their effects. Everybody. And read it for your kids. Read it for your grandparents. Read it and learn. And know the truth. And then you can make decisions.
All right, let me get a couple of listener comments, first by email, then by a phone. This is an email, and the emailer asks if he can send this comment anonymously. Just says, Evan, my heart goes out to these guests. I represent many criminal clients with substance abuse issues. I can absolutely verify that many of my clients who just get out of jail are denied inpatient treatment that they desperately need because, As it is explained, they have too much clean time because of their incarceration. This incredibly nonsensical position is dangerous. Without proper treatment, an addict will simply go back to their drug-seeking behavior, and worse, no longer have the tolerance to take drugs at the levels they had been using. The danger of overdose is extremely high. This is absolutely something that needs to change if we are ever to really see rehabilitation instead of relapse and overdose. That's from a listener who asked to remain anonymous. And let me get Gary on the phone, who's been weighing it as well. Go ahead, Gary.
Hi, Evan. Thank you, and thanks to your guests. One of your guests mentioned that he believed that the insurance companies were abdicating their responsibility or not living up to their responsibilities. But I would offer that we have to keep in mind private insurance companies, that their primary responsibility is to their shareholders and stockholders, and it's to increase profits. And this is why one of the reasons why I believe, and I'd like to hear the comments of your guests, but we really need to consider universal single-payer health care. Because rather than a health care system that's based on profits, we need to turn to a health care system that's based on need. And when we do that, maybe we can get rid of this lingering attitude that addiction is somehow a character issue and not a medical issue. Thanks.
Gary, thanks very much. And Donna, I saw your reaction at first. I mean, I think Gary's point is not saying he thinks it's okay, but he's saying there's a profit incentive, and what Gary is saying is get rid of that. Go to single payer, take them out of the
equation. May I address that?
Yeah.
Again, look up the book on All You Need to Know About the Affordable Health Care Act. There right now, and it went into effect in January 2015, is what they call the Independent Payment Advisory Board, which is a group of 15 people who are political appointees, not medical people. They are going to be making decisions that are not subject to congressional approval to lower health care costs. So when you talk single payer, there's a jolt of electricity that goes through me. You want to put all, one-third of our economy is the health care industry, and I do mean industry. You want to put that in the hands of 15 political, non-medical people who are making decisions to access to care. I, who have paid my premiums, will be old enough that they can say, it's not worth it to give her a hip replacement. What has she got left? 10 good years? No. I totally, adamantly oppose putting any more of our health care system into the hands of the government that is funded by the pharmaceuticals. I had no idea insurance companies had stockholders, shareholders. This is a money-making enterprise, and they're doing it on the backs of the people who work so hard to pay their bills and pay for their insurance and take care of their families.
Okay.
Avi
Israel, go ahead.
The problem is that, I somewhat may not agree completely with Donna, and I think
Bernie Sanders.
Insurance companies are supposed to be non-for-profit companies. You know, if you look at, for instance, Blue Cross and Blue Shield, and I only have I can only speak for that. They're a non-for-profit company. Univera is supposed to be non-for-profit, but yet if you look at their earning from last year, you'll see that they all made millions of dollars, and they're paying a huge amount of compensation to their CEO. If we took the profit out of non-for-profit, I think maybe things will be okay. You know, the idea is for a single payer for me is an attractive idea. We can blame the government for not insisting on that. But there is place for private insurance companies who want to supplement, a single payer. So, we can go ahead and blame whatever, there's enough blame to go around here for government, for insurance, for everybody. The fact is this, we're paying for a product. Donna and her husband paid for a product for years, and she has never been able to access that product in the right way. Insurance companies have prescribed my son into addiction in a way, subsidized his addiction, and then knowing the fact that this kid had not only an addiction problem but also has a medical problem, was refused treatment. And in my eyes, if he was if he gotten that treatment early enough, you know, who knows? Maybe Michael will be here today with us.
So, Avi, just let me jump in.
Conversation with you.
Just because we are running out of time, let me jump in and say, you know, to Gary, the caller's point, and, you know, some of the debate about single payer, it's an absolutely legitimate conversation.
But I think
within this framework, what you're hearing from Donna and Avi and the parents in the room is, and frankly, what you're hearing from the Attorney General of New York State today is that right now there is a framework, a legal framework that says addiction coverage should be happening for people, that you don't need a whole overhaul of a system. You need behavior that conforms with the laws already there. And maybe we need changes in certain practices, and maybe we need different pieces of legislation. Those are up for debate. But what the AG is saying, Eric Schneiderman says, call my office today if you are not getting the help because this should not be happening. And that's what I kind of want. I think our parents want to leave you with here. But if you've got more questions, Donna, one more time. We're running out of time. Next Tuesday night, what's going on?
Next Tuesday night, please, anyone who can help, come. Anyone who needs help, come. And I would like to say to all people out there, all people suffering with addiction need your love. They need your support. They are not worthless, defective characters. There are people suffering with the disease. Please love them.
All right. Well, and it's Tuesday night, the 17th. Coming up 6 days from now, Genesee Community College, 6:30 p.m. Town hall meeting. They'll have information, someone there from the AG's office, maybe other local leaders who can help you understand. Avi Israel, thanks for taking the time on the phone with us. Donna Rose, Kathy Miller, Becky, good luck to you and your families.
Donna.
And thank you very, very much for being here. Thank you. Have a great afternoon, everyone. We'll talk with you on Thursday.